The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed in the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Food for Thought with your host, Meg Brachichi. Did you know that your health is directly related to how you live your life? If you eat right, live right, and feel your best, you'll stay healthy. It's not really a mystery. Now, here is the host of Food for Thought, Meg Brachichi.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Food for Thought, information that feeds your body, mind, and soul. I'm your host, Meg Brachichi, and today we're going to explore the causes of recurrent miscarriages, repeated failed IVF, and unexplained infertility through the eyes of one of the leading authorities and specialists in this area, Dr. Jonathan Scher. He's also the author of two books, Everything You Need to Know About Pregnancy and Preventing Miscarriages, The Good News. He has a Park Avenue private practice and is currently associate clinical professor at the Mount Sinai School of Medicine in New York City. I heard about Dr. Scher through a mutual patient about 7 or 8 years ago, and I'm so thankful for that introduction. I started referring women to Dr. Scher when I became suspicious of something that kept a client from having a healthy pregnancy. You see, many of the women I see have gone through a great succession of IVF treatments, maybe up to 7. I've had women with repeated miscarriages, 3, 4, and 5 miscarriages. I've also had women that I could actually feel within between the 3rd and 4th week of their cycle that they were pregnant. I could feel that quality in their pulse because I practiced Chinese medicine. But then I would notice a few days before their period that quality would be gone, and then they would get their menstrual cycle. So I think, this is one of the big areas that I see, and I've started referring women to Dr. Scher because I didn't want them to go into IVF treatment with having certain tests run. And I think anyone working in the area of infertility, whether it's a physician, a naturopath, or acupuncturist, I believe our ultimate goal is to help women or a couple to achieve their dream of having a child. I also believe it is important to consider various avenues, various perspectives when considering infertility. Sometimes I believe it is a combination of modalities that will set women along that path. And Jonathan Scher is one of those people. And he provides a missing piece, that why factor for many women and couples. So what I would like to do is read a brief passage from Preventing Miscarriages. I think that will really set the tone for today's discussion. Women and men need to know the various treatments. Women, what questions to ask their doctors, and how to ensure that they are being offered the most appropriate treatment rather than being told to keep on trying again and again. If a mother's body rejects the fertilized egg, the pregnancy fails, and in fact, unexplained infertility may be repeated pregnancy loss due to implantation failure. This is an increasingly important area of research. Today, a whole new range of maternal immunological tests is available. Repeated failure of IVF treatments in particular may have an immunologic cause. Patients who repeatedly fail IVF should have certain tests for immune disorders. So on that note, Dr. Scher, I'd like to welcome you to the show.
Thanks. Thanks very much, Meg. That's a very nice, generous introduction. I appreciate it. And, obviously, that some of that came from my books. I agree with it, but I agree with everything you've said.
Mm. So what I'd like to find out, can you tell us, and I'm sure you've shared this story repeatedly, and yeah. I love how you express it in Preventing Miscarriages.
Yeah.
How did you what happened for you clinically that made you really start to explore these fertility issues? I think you said you started back in the 80s.
Oh, yeah. You know, I started, you're right, in the 80s, even a little before that. People would miscarry repeatedly, and there was so little that you could do. I mean, we used to do the odd culture for the wrong organism, and this evolved, and it was an area that was largely ignored. And then when in the 80s psychological studies came out, but a lot of them done by New York therapists, which showed that men and, as you mentioned, men and women suffered tremendously, especially a couple who are having difficulty. They invest so much time, money, emotional energy in attempting to conceive, and when they experience early pregnancy loss, their grief is, you know, usually very profound. And there was so little to offer them. They kept getting told, keep trying, you're going to eventually hit the nail on the head, which to me is not helpful. And I just want to start off by saying that today, through research, which, by the way, I've got a nice little quote that research is good for your health, for people who can't get grants, that's what they say, because today there are so many new diagnostic tests, and the area of immunology is one of them, but there are others as well. And because of this, I'd like couples who are experiencing recurrent loss or recurrent failed IVF or just unexplained infertility, where they say, I know, you know, try again because we can't find a cause, that there are three things that they should remember. One, don't take no for an answer. Pursue it. Two, treatments are available today. It's a myth to say that there's very little that can be done. That's not true. And the third thing is, in most cases, you can have a baby. You see, people get told that it's always a genetic problem.
Right. I hear that repeatedly.
But of course, now with technology, especially in IVF, they can put in chromosomally and microarray tested embryos. But even when those fail, they say, oh, it's an egg quality issue. But there's a recent article out now in the American Journal of, in fact, this month, of reproductive immunology. And I'd like to just read you the paragraph in answer to always blaming egg quality. And whenever you miscarry, it's an abnormal baby. Unlike sporadic miscarriage, recurrent miscarriages may occur even if the fetus or the embryo has a normal karyotype, that is, normal chromosomes, as up to 50% of recurrent miscarriages are being shown to occur in normal, chromosomally normal embryos. That's the quote. But in fact, Webb Branch in Salt Lake City showed, the very careful researcher, that the more miscarriages you have, the less, or the more losses you have, the less likely they are to be chromosomal. So we can't do anything about chromosome abnormalities. We can only diagnose them at this stage of our knowledge. But there are so many other avenues that need to be investigated.
Well, you know, what's very interesting is, and I just spoke to her. Do you remember a patient by the name of Anna Tucker?
Yes, I do.
Anna gave birth to a daughter almost a year ago at the age of 48. And she had her first child at, we worked together at 41 or 42. And then she had a series of three miscarriages.
Yes.
And I had sent her to Dr. Dana Cohen. She had a subclinical thyroid. And then I sent her to you.
Yes.
And then a few years had gone by, but she actually got pregnant naturally, but then went back to you and you had put her on, she was on Lovenox and IVIG. I think I'm jumping the gun a little, but the point I'm trying to make, this woman had repeated miscarriages and everyone kept saying, oh, it's a chromosomal issue. And I went, no, there's something else going on.
Yes, you know, I remember, Anna, if I could, lovely outcome, but if I can just support what you've said.
Yes.
I just saw a woman yesterday, a patient, who first saw someone and started IVF when she was 36, right? She's had repeated failed IVFs, And now at 42, she's asked her IVF doctor, I heard about, you know, you seem to have done all the tests, but I heard about there's some immune tests.
Mm-hmm.
He said, oh, well, you know, I don't know if we believe in all that, but if you want to go and see Jonathan Chu, you can. Mm-hmm. And what upsets me is he has a young woman, 36, who after failing IVF once or twice, because when a woman's young, especially that age, she should have trouble limiting her family, not be having problems. And mm-hmm. and they wait sometimes for 4, 5, 6 years, when now there is the age issue starts coming a little bit, mm-hmm. before they get tested. Because, if I might just say, the word unexplained, when it comes to reproduction, is really a cop-out until all the testing has been done. And that means to satisfy all the basic tests like diabetes, thyroid, cultures, etc., and then go on to the more sophisticated new tests which are coming out of bench research at the moment and being applied to the bedside.
I couldn't agree with you more. And it's true. Well, you have unexplained infertility. That's why so many women come to me, because it's like, no, there's something underlying. And something I do want to interject, and, you know, and I want you to continue. I'm seeing so many women with underlying inflammatory issues.
Absolutely.
I'm seeing so many women with autoimmune issues, and subclinical thyroid is such a part of the picture.
Oh, you're so good, Meg, because you've just hit the nail on the head now.
And what I have noticed, and I read your book, and I went, wait a minute, I do believe that so much of this autoimmune stuff is related to an inflammatory gut, a leaky gut.
Absolutely.
I will have to, I would say if 80% of our immune system comes through our gut, then we need to pay attention to that. So what I've done with a lot of women is that's something I clear up. That is something that I address. And then, you know, and sometimes what happens too after that, I've had to send people to you, but I do believe that is such a crucial part of the picture.
Yeah.
Now, here's a question. I don't mean to cut you off. Why are so many of the IVF doctors opposed to all this immunological testing? Meanwhile, they'll do such, like I've seen it, 4 to 5 IVF treatments before they consider it.
Okay. Well, let me first tell you, I've had a woman recently who's had 22 transfers.
Oh, my God.
And even the basic tests weren't all satisfied, because this is what people are trained to do. And they think everything is to do with the embryo. It's mm-hmm. good. It's excellent. They don't succeed. It wasn't as good as we thought. Try again. But I want to just go back for a second.
Sure.
And just say what you said about inflammation. There's a new saying out in one of the immunology journals, which I liked. I don't remember very much, but I like something to quote sometimes. And they say, once you've done the basic tests, all pregnancy problems, you know, repeated failed IVF, recurrent miscarriage, growth retardation, all of them are due to two things, inflammation and clotting.
Mm-hmm.
Inflammation
yes.
and clotting.
Yes.
That's basically it. Okay. Why do they wait? I'll tell you why. Okay. Reproductive immunology is a basic science, but it's new. It's new. It's very obvious, but it's new. And it's really only been around just over 20 years. So a lot of medical schools, a lot of people who are doing IVF now, although the younger ones have no excuse, who just out of their residency or their fellowship, do a lot of medical schools even today don't have programs in reproductive immunology, because 20, 25 years might sound a lot, but it's not really when it comes to medicine
mm-hmm.
and standard mm-hmm. bulletins. So that's the first thing. And it's a very exacting science. There's a lot not understood, and there's a lot of literature out there now. And unless you follow it, you don't know about it. That's one thing. And secondly, a big problem is that, and Alan Beer, who's the father of a lot of this, made this point, that a lot of people don't understand it and criticize it, but instead of following it, going to meetings of American and European societies and Australian Society of Reproductive Immunology and listening to the new work or reading all the immunology and genetic journals, they just keep doing IVF. And their reasoning is that there are not enough randomized clinical studies out there, blinded studies, and Cochrane reviews haven't done them because there are not enough of these studies. But two things. One, there's certainly enough studies in peer-reviewed journals. There are few randomized blinded studies because when you're talking about pregnancy and you're giving treatment, it's very difficult to do a blinded study where you give one person the drug and one person the injection of sterile water.
Right.
In fact, when they first looked at Lovenox, which is a form of heparin, which is given for blood flow and has now recently been shown to have immune properties as well, it was started at the University of Pennsylvania, where 50% of women received an injection of Lovenox and 50% got water, the placebo. And the study had to be discontinued because even nobody knew, and the nurses didn't know, and the docs didn't know because it was blinded who was receiving which of the two.
And let's hold that thought, Jonathan, and we'll come back in a few moments.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Caring for someone with autism can be full of challenges and triumphs. Wherever you are on your autism journey, we all benefit from good information and guidance. Join host Rob Haupt every week for a friendly show that will leave you inspired and informed. Tune in to Autism Spectrum Radio. Our guests include parents, advocates, and experts to discuss current experiences, treatments, and breakthroughs for those living with autism. Listen every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Do you know that over 70% of Americans with severe disabilities are unemployed? Are you one of the 2.5 million Americans with epilepsy? If you are, or know someone struggling with these issues, tune in to Disability Matters with Joyce Bender. On the show, Joyce will discuss these issues as well as others. She will have on nationally known guests that will offer helpful insight on disability matters and let you, the listener, call in with your questions and concerns. So if you struggle with a disability or know someone who does, listen to Disability Matters with Joyce Bender. Heard every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time here on VoiceAmerica.com.
Tune in to the Voice America Variety Channel on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Voice America Variety broadcasts a diverse array of topics, reaching a global community. Our experts come from all walks of life, and the topics they discuss are everything from current events, arts and entertainment, leadership, parenting, relationships, self-improvement, career advice, and a variety of other topics. Check us out today. You're sure to find something of interest. Voice America Variety. Talk on today's hot topics.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
This is Food for Thought with Meg Brachichi. If you have a question or comment for Meg or her guests, please call into the show at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send an email to megbrachichi@gmail.com. Now, back to Food for Thought.
Welcome back, everyone, to Food for Thought. I'm your host, Meg Ricicci, and I'm here today with Dr. Jonathan Scheer, and we're discussing the causes of recurrent miscarriages, repeated failed IVF, and unexplained infertility. So, Jonathan, can you continue with where you left off from?
Yes, certainly. The study on comparing Lovenox heparin to water had to be discontinued in the trial, as I found that 50% were getting pregnant and they felt it's unethical to go on giving sterile water to the couple. So So there are a lot of problems with doing randomized studies, and that explains why they're not as frequent as should be. But if we rely on that, we're going to miss a whole generation or two of women who could be helped with treatment.
Do you think that's going to change? Because that is I'm sure a frustration for you, but I have actually like three women right now in the throes of IVF, and I know there's something else going on.
I know it's going to change. I know it's going to change for one simple reason. Some of the harshest critics of immune treatment, when everything else has been excluded, of course, are now starting to do the very tests that still in their infancy, but the very tests that they criticized. Further, I see it because I see the reports and the patients show them to me when they come and see me. Further, with all the big advance in medicine and in immunology and new diagnostic tests, and the public are aware of these things. Further, the medical journals, mainstream medical journals, general medical journals are now having many publications on immune aspects of what happens during pregnancy. In fact, there was even an article in the New York Times about checking for inflammatory antibodies in early pregnancy as a cause of childhood illness, as a cause and of what we find that if we treat it in early pregnancy, if we treat inflammation in early pregnancy, there's a lesser incidence of pregnancy complications in a continuing pregnancy, which include premature labor. There's just been a presentation on this. Abruption, growth retardation, preeclampsia. We're preventing that but in reproduction by treating these inflammatory cytokines. So it's going to be accepted.
Well,
they've come to realize, people who are against this, that the embryo being foreign, 50% coming from the husband, is the only example in nature where something foreign can live in a mammal. That is a human, for example. The only example. And it's starting to be understood, but it's not understood why the embryo doesn't get rejected. But one thing's for certain, the mother's body has to adapt immunologically, and that's a whole area of research, the immune adaptation to pregnancy.
So that, I was hoping for you to say that. I really wanted you to talk about that. And I think because that's so true. So what, let's see. One thing I want to interject, and then I want you to go into all the testing and what you do. For example, when I work with women that come to me and they have Hashimoto's and elevated antibodies and they're trying to get pregnant, I put them on an anti-inflammatory diet. And I give them various supplements. Their antibodies lower, and then they conceive.
Definitely. So, absolutely. That's what you're doing is immune treatment.
Yes.
Naturally, which is great. Decrease what you do, inflammatory mediators.
So what I would like, I think there's such a we factor between what you and I do together. I think it's so beneficial.
Absolutely.
But I want you to talk about...
You're an integral part of our treatment. You know that, of course.
Well, it's a we factor, and I'm always about whatever can help a woman conceive, have a healthy pregnancy, and have a healthy child. That is all that it's about. And I've sat in on you. You did an intake with one of my patients. The detail that you go into and that medical intake, it was astounding. So what I'd like you to walk us through, what do you feel the causes are? And I mean, or I should say, like, what are some of the testing that you do? And what do you see? You talked about the clotting factor, and maybe you can go into that, and the killer cells and a variety of things.
Okay. When a couple come in, and it's always nice to see them together, and they've had recurrent IVF failure, implantation failure, or recurrent miscarriage, I spend a long time on the history, because even with all the technology today, the history gives you the clue. And when I've done it, you've done it as long as I have. You know, I listen to history and then I do the test, but they have to fit in with what I think, and they usually do to make sense. I take a detailed history, and then I then review the tests that the patients have had done because they've been everywhere before they see me.
Yes.
When they come see me, they're scraping the bottom of the barrel, right? Yeah. So mm-hmm. I go through their voluminous records and test results, and I then recommend testing. And the testing I do falls into two groups, making certain that the basic testing that every recurrent miscarrier or every repeated failed IVF patient should have, make sure it's been satisfied. Like you said, their thyroid's been checked, their anti-thyroid antibodies, their prolactin, it's exclude PCOS, but checking their male hormones, their fasting insulin. I won't go through it all, the thrombophilias. Because very often, and their karyotypes, their chromosomes, depending whether they've had a child or not, primary or secondary. And you often find that they haven't all been satisfied. Their vitamin D level, which is so important because it's anti-inflammatory. Once I've discussed the basic tests, I then go on to the immune tests, which are usually, it depends on how many I do, depending on that particular couple's problem.
Right.
The others are just basic tests, including some immune tests, which everyone should have with these problems. Then I do the specific ones. And we do a couple of these specific tests, which we send to not the commercial laboratories who don't do them, but to specific immunological laboratories, which some of them, others do others, because they're complex tests. Mm-hmm. And we do a few of these tests, and the reason we don't do only one immune test is because at this state of our knowledge, we don't have one immune test which gives us the answer. We don't have one marker, so we do a handful of these tests, and we take them into account with each other and with the patient's history in interpretation. And these tests include checking for clotting, checking for what are known as antiphospholipid antibodies, which attack the blood vessels of the implanting embryo and interfere with the blood flow.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an important special autoimmune test. Then we also look at the different immune cells. The body has many types of immune cells, 70, 80 different types, if you remember the white cells. And we do a panel of about 9, looking particularly at the natural killer cell. This is all described in my book, by the way, looking at the natural killer cell, which whose function is to attack tumor cells and viruses. And we look for elevation, because if there's an elevation, Alan Beer showed that can attack the embryo, and if it's very high percentage, they won't have a successful pregnancy no matter what they do.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, patients must remember that if any of the immune tests are abnormal, it has nothing to do with their health. In fact, when there are elevations, the patients are usually very healthy and have hyperactive immune systems and don't get ill. So it's actually good news for them from that point of view. Then another important basic test, which every patient having IVF should undergo, even before their first IVF, in my opinion, because IVF is an expensive procedure and it's also trying, etc., is to measure the level of very inflammatory antibodies as opposed to the less inflammatory ones, of which the body produces both. You don't want too high a level of inflammatory antibodies, as you mentioned earlier on, because these inflammatory antibodies attack the embryonic cells before and during implantation and cause a poor pregnancy outcome. So that's another important test. Another fairly new important test of the past 2 to 3 years is to measure an immune cell which is the journals are full of now called the T regulatory cell. Mm-hmm. This cell is the CEO immune cell of the reproductive immune response to adapt to pregnancy. It controls the immune response. It doesn't allow it to be too intense, and so we check that level. And everything I'm mentioning has a treatment. And then we look to see if the patient has enough blocking antibody that's forming a shield around the embryo and protecting it from antibodies and rejection. So another special test I'd like to mention is mm-hmm. something that's not commonly done and that's new. It's always important if a patient has miscarried before, whether it was failed after an IVF procedure or after just a spontaneous miscarriage, to check the chromosomes on the baby tissue. And if the chromosomes were not tested, we now request the tissue slides, which the hospitals or pathology laboratories hold, and we send them to an early placental pathologist. I use Dr. Karen Salafia, and mm-hmm. she examines the tissue in a different way. She looks to see what actually caused the baby not to live, whether there was clotting, whether there was infection, whether mm-hmm. there's immune change, etc. So it's almost like doing a post-mortem on that early pregnancy tissue, and that tells us if we're on the right track and helps us with treatment.
How many weeks does that embryo does that pregnancy have to be along for them to do that test?
As long as there was a clinical pregnancy, that is a pregnancy which has been detected by ultrasound. Because so that would be like 6 weeks onwards. Even if it's an empty sac, the sac itself must be tested, must be aspirated and tested, because the sac is baby tissue.
So we have just a few minutes left in this segment, and I want to address this. How come we're not doing testing? How come you're bringing up something that makes so much sense? How come we're not testing?
I don't know.
that makes absolute sense.
You know, Meg, I think that especially when there's IVF failure, they must be tested. But I think prior to an IVF being done, especially in women who are not, you know, old, they should have some of these tests run. Because if you can find something which may benefit and may decrease the chance of failure of that IVF, one should do it. Because if you remember, IVF was first done for blocked tubes. They did that in Cambridge, Stepstone Edwards, mm-hmm. for women whose tubes are blocked so the egg and sperm couldn't meet. Now they're doing it for so-called unexplained infertility.
Yeah.
And I think that's another reason we see such a high failure rate. You know, there's something else. It's not the blocked tubes. IVF wasn't intended for that. But, of course, there's a big place for IVF. I'm not decrying that. But
No. I see that.
The tubes are open. They're not getting pregnant. They're now doing after 6, 7, 8 months, and now going for IVF. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, they haven't checked, like, for mycoplasma and ureaplasma infection in early pregnancy, which is very important, by doing a culture. Mm-hmm. And they haven't checked the vitamin D level or the thyroid or the antithyroids or the prolactin or the ANA, because that's where the problem must lie. Many times we've had patients with failed IVF, mm-hmm. unexplained, in inverted commas. We find a treatment and then they conceive in a natural cycle. When we introduce the treatment, they don't need to go back for IVF.
You follow what I'm saying, right? And I just want to interject, and then we're going to go to a break. I had someone who just had an IVF, and it failed. And I said, why did they feel it failed? And she said, it was chromosomal. Well, how do you know? Well, that's because it failed.
Yep.
And excuse me?
No, I don't know if they test the chromosomes, but...
They didn't. You're just stating what so many women are being told, that, oh, it didn't take, it's chromosomal. So on that note, we're going to take a break. We will be back in a few moments to continue our conversation with Dr. Scherer. This is unbelievably enlightening, and I love the information today. Back in a moment.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
What sets apart VoiceAmerica.tv from the other video content providers on the Internet? Choice and flexibility means that you can host your video content live or on demand on the main VoiceAmerica.tv channels through your own branded media player or your own private TV channel. We support multiple media formats, so all of your video content can be in one place. We offer a number of advertising and video packages. For more information, visit VoiceAmerica.tv. If you think you've seen online TV like this before, let us surprise you.
Think of the world 50 years ago. Now think of this same world and how it'll be 50 years from now. Did you know that if the world's population continues to grow at its current rate, our children and grandchildren will only have 25% of the resources per capita that our parents and grandparents had? We must preserve the foundation of a quality standard of living. That foundation starts with Go Green Radio. Join your host, Jill Buck, for Go Green Radio every Friday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Voice America. These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
Find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Find out about new shows, featured guests, and what's up this week. Find us on Facebook by searching keyword Voice America.
This is Food for Thought with Meg Brachichi. If you have a question or comment for Meg or her guests, please call into the show at 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send an email to megbrachichi@gmail.com. Now, back to Food for Thought.
Welcome back, everyone. And I'm here with Dr. Jonathan Scherer, and we are talking about issues, the causes of recurrent miscarriages, repeated IVF, and unexplained infertility. So, Jonathan, please continue.
Yeah. You know, I gave you the outline of the very special tests that we do. Maybe I should just mention, you see, not everything's immune. We do that after we've satisfied the basic tests.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the basic tests we do can be divided into things we look at anatomically in the patient, particularly in the mother, to see that her uterine shape is normal. We do either hysterosalpingogram to check the cavity shape of mm-hmm. the uterus where the baby's going to develop, and to see that the tubes are open, the fallopian tubes, because you can find abnormalities. Some people say, some studies show 1% of couples who recurrently miscarry, others show up to 10%. It depends. The uterus forms in the very early part of pregnancy and fuses, but two little chambers fuse and then they open. And so you can get a double uterus, a double cervix, a septum like a band running down the cervix. So you've got to make sure, and everything has a treatment, so you might want to make sure that the uterus is normal. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, DES, silbestrol estrogen, hasn't been used to treat miscarriages since about 1972-73, so we're not seeing a lot more major structural abnormalities which it caused. Mm-hmm. Then some women have what's called a weak cervix or incompetent cervix,
right.
And that's usually caused as a miscarriage in the second trimester around about 15, 16 weeks. That has to be excluded. I mean, I remember seeing a patient who had had, this was years ago, who had had three losses at 16, 17 weeks where she had a rapid miscarriage, and she was told to keep trying, and all she needed was a stitch and had the baby. So one has to look for these things. And in fact, in my book, for each cause that I mentioned, there's an actual patient story, unedited, because the publisher, HarperCollins, did not allow you to correct anything, even if it medically the wrong words were used. So they verbatim real patients. And like you gave an example with Erica, we've got on each treatment, so we have some for incompetent cervix, for argument's sake. The other area we exclude are infections. Any infection can really cause a single miscarriage. For example, like listeria from eating cold cuts, which pregnant women who've miscarried or any pregnant should avoid in the summer months, eating cold cuts off a counter. But listeria wouldn't cause recurrent miscarriages. But the organisms which cause recurrent miscarriages, which are not sexually transmitted ones, are mycoplasma and ureaplasma. They sort of a cross between a bacteria and a virus, and you have to look at them in the man, semen, and the woman. It's just a culture and this treatment, because they cause inflammation every pregnancy and make implantation very difficult, and if they do get pregnant, can promote a miscarriage. So just going down from that, we always do tests. I won't get to them all, but we always do tests on the man as well, not only on the woman.
And that seems to be an area of I can't. I mean, I know you've seen this. I've seen women. Oh my God, I've worked with for months, and it ended up finally the husband was tested, and there were issues going on, and that was a big part of the picture.
Sure, you cannot ignore it. They can have chromosome problems. They can have sperm genetic problems. We do the sperm DNA integrity test, where we look at the chromosomal material in the head of the sperm, the fragmentation index or the stability, which can cause infertility or miscarriages. Of course, they have a count, but that's standard. Just like you check a woman's FSH, estradiol, that's an estrogen, and the anti-mullerian hormone, AMH, on the second or third day of their cycle to look at the egg reserve. So we look at the quality of the sperm. You can't just ignore one. It's multifactorial.
Yes,
it's multifactorial.
Absolutely.
Then we look at the next area after anatomy and infections. We look at endocrine disorders such as thyroid, as you mentioned, Meg. We will look, make sure they're not diabetic, make sure they don't have polycystic ovary syndrome, which is a very, very common reproductive hormonal disorder. And to test for that, we test the woman's male hormones, and also we do a fasting insulin and glucose level. We get them to fast, measure their blood sugar, which will be normal because they're not diabetic, but we see how much insulin they require to keep it normal. Because if they require a lot, known as insulin resistance, that's associated with poor egg quality and needs to be treated.
Right. And now here's, I have a lot of women that come in with polycystic ovarian syndrome.
Yes.
But is there a subcategory of women that are getting regular periods that are PCOS?
Great question. Absolutely. Absolutely. The classical PCOS patient, just like most things in medicine, you hardly ever get, which would be the very overweight woman who maybe menstruates every 3-4 months or 6 months. A lot of acne, a lot of excess hair growth on the chest, on the beard area. You don't see that. You don't see that in medicine.
No.
In fact, I've got a lady who's actually an endocrinologist who's very tall and very slim. And she's got PCOS, and she required treatment during the pregnancy and had a successful pregnancy. So, no, you're quite right. You don't have to have long intervals of no periods, not at all. You don't get a full house with it. But you have to test for it. because there's a famous author sort of guy was a name H.L. Mencken about 100 years ago. He was a journalist, and he said, for every complex problem, there's a simple answer, and it is wrong. You know, you've got to go for it. You've got to, in PubMed, a very academic mm-hmm. publication, there's an issue where they said, when you're dealing with recurrent miscarriage, pregnancy loss, reproductive failure, many, many tests must be done. They must all be done, because it's not unexplained till you've done them all, and you've got to improve everything.
Yes, and I sometimes would, you know, I do get a lot of referrals from various clinics in the city.
Yes.
And sometimes, again, this sounds so terrible, but I will say it. You're repeating IVF after IVF. It is an expensive process.
I see this all the time, yeah.
And it's like, take a break and do some other test. And it's, I don't know. I'm just lately, I guess I'm getting a little exacerbated for many of the women that I treat, that I actually sent someone to you that had, I think about six IVFs. And I'm not sure if she saw you. And I said, I think you have a clotting factor issue. And I mentioned some other things. She called me and she said, you were right. No one tested me.
Right. That's why it's not unexplained till you've done the tests.
Yeah.
You see, it used to be said that you could find the cause of miscarriage or failed IVF or implantation failure about 50% of the time. Right? So there were 50% where you couldn't find it. But that's why people mustn't take no for an answer, because there are new diagnostic tests out there. The technology is out there. Science is good for your health. And they are now translating the basic tests from the bench scientists, translational medicine, into clinical. They bring it into the clinical field. So there are a lot of new diagnostic tests and treatment. For example, the immunology is new. That's mm-hmm. what we've been talking about. A lot of new diagnostic tests and a lot of new treatments.
And I also, again, feel a tremendous part of the picture, as I said, that women that come to see me, so many of them are inflamed. Any woman that has fibroids or endometriosis is estrogen dominant. She's absolutely inflamed.
Yes.
And what I do is I put her on an inflammatory diet. I do detoxification. I try to help with methylation. Maybe you can talk about that in a second. But I want to clear that inflammation, because I know that is a key factor in what's keeping these women from getting pregnant. And I feel that, there are a variety of issues. Women are not getting pregnant. I do believe stress is a huge component.
Yeah.
And looking at lifestyle, looking at diet, if we can clean up these areas, getting women optimally healthy, and then if it's necessary to use, Lovenox or, heparin or whatever to assist a woman in getting pregnant, let us minimize the medication. So that, too, will also help in creating a healthy pregnancy and a healthy outcome.
Absolutely. I mean, there's no question. What you do is so complementary to what I do and what people who do this do. It's so important. I mean, inflammation's everything. Inflammation and clotting. And I just wanted to say a little something about, you touched on endometriosis, I should mention.
Mm-hmm.
Endometriosis, that's where some of the endometrial blood from the period grows in the pelvis,
mm-hmm.
is a very, very inflammatory condition. It produces a very inflammatory antibody, which I alluded to earlier, called TNF-alpha. And TNF-alpha, you can even find it in the peritoneal fluid. That's the fluid inside the abdomen and pelvis. You find it in the endometrial lining. And that is why women who have even minimal endometriosis, in other words, when they get examined or have an ultrasound, there are no cysts, what they call chocolate cysts. It's, mm-hmm. it's not advanced. If they have a laparoscopy, which I'm not recommending as an investigation, but if they do have it, and sometimes people have it, but if they have a laparoscopy, you can see little burnt matchhead spots, little dots of endometriosis, and yet those women have trouble conceiving or keeping. And that people say, but it's not important because the tubes are open. It's got nothing to do with that. Just the inflammation, the inflammatory antibodies or cytokines like TNF-alpha that endometrial tissue produces in endometriosis is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. Or someone says, well, my doctor removed my endometriosis. It's still there. It's a basic underlying condition.
And well, that's yes, and I have to. I want to interject. I actually had somebody who was seeing you that came to me, and she had a history of fibroids. She had a myomectomy a few years ago. They came back. I said, we have to treat the underlying cause of the inflammation in your body.
Right.
And there was a history of ovarian cancer and some other things in the family. So what I'm going to do, and I'll speak to you about her after the show, but I'm cleaning up her diet. Her blood sugar is all over the place, and she has serious constipation issues, a lot of inflammation. I believe that is such a huge part. And she has gone through countless IVF cycles.
Yeah. You see, that's my point. I mean, there's definitely a place for IVF. There's no question.
I agree.
But repeated failure, the doctor must stop and take a breath and say to himself, this is not all egg quality. I've been putting in good eggs. And recently, with all the PGD testing, which checks the chromosomes of the embryo before it's replaced, and also different forms of microarray, which is like a genetic test beyond chromosomes. When they normal, I'm still seeing that where they fail with those, and they're terribly expensive. They double the cost of the IVF. And they still they're still saying, oh, well, it's egg quality. You know, we've got to improve. You follow. I think we're coming from the same place, that's for sure.
Well, yes, and I hope you continue to practice for a while.
I'll stop when I get old.
Okay.
You know, and then just a few things. You know, sometimes patients ask, but I think you deal with this about, is smoking okay, drinking coffee and drinking alcohol? And I think that the one thing that's really bad, I mean, you can address this, that they should never do is smoke, the husband or the wife. Because that, in anything to do with fertility or during pregnancy itself, I do high-risk pregnancy, is a disaster if they smoke.
Or recreational drugs.
I
see that in my practice.
And is it all right if I continue my marijuana? Absolutely not.
I say to men and women, during this time of trying to conceive, treat yourself as if you're pregnant. So whatever you put in your body is, you want it to be absolutely clean.
Right.
And I think that is really imperative. We have a couple of minutes left, so
yes.
I would love any closing comments that you have.
Yes, sure. Okay. So as you mentioned, lifestyle is important. Patients ask after miscarriage, when can they try again? Well, they can try again whenever they like. You know, they do some testing, but then if that's been done, whenever they like. It's whenever they psychologically feel up to it. There's no waiting period anymore. People still think you have to wait 3 months or 6 months after miscarriage, but it's been clearly shown that there's no greater risk if a patient conceives soon after miscarriage or pregnancy loss. And in closing, I just want to say that patients, as I said earlier, must remember three things. And I must repeat this. Don't take no for an answer. Don't just keep accepting failure. If you recurrently miscarry, recurrently fail IVF, you have to be investigated and don't take no. If your doctor won't do it, find someone who'll do it. Also, secondly, treatments are available, which are often successful. And thirdly, unless there's some major medical or physical problem, the patient, the couple can have a baby. There's never anything wrong with their bodies. And I think that's too important to remember. and not to blame themselves and get themselves tested. I think that that's the key.
What I love about you is that you are probably one of the kindest and generous and compassionate doctors I've ever met. I really do mean that. And having the opportunity to sit with you that day during the intake, I could see how the tremendous care and love that you have for what you do. So, Dr. Scherer, I so want to thank you for being here today. You're an amazing guest. I hope that many women will be able to listen to this broadcast or listen to the podcast of this in the future. And again, thank you, everyone. May you have an incredible week. Be well. If you have any questions, feel free to give me a call or give Dr. Jonathan Scherer a call. Many blessings to all. Have a great day.
Thanks again for being part of our show. Food for Thought with Meg Ricchici can be heard live every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Until our next show, think, feel, and live a healthier, sexier, and better life.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.